Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Reading this morning from Canto 3, Chapter 6. We're going to read from, we'll cover from 25 33. Apologies up front. This is way up here, subject matter. It's the universal form. So if you're feeling tired, you can just tune out and you won't miss anything. The universal form is a subject matter that really doesn't have a comparable equivalent in any other theology that I'm aware of. It's very specific and unique to Vedic wisdom. It does get its prominent place in Bhagavad Gita. There's a whole chapter. The second canto, the first chapter, is about the universal form. And then again, here in the third canto, it's important subject matter. It's not easy to understand subject matter. That's why it's like, but Maitreya is presenting it. That's the speaker. The listener is Vidura. Maitreya has just heard Uddhava Gita, and Krishna indicated to Maitreya, I have some service for you. I want you to explain all these things to Vidura, who will be coming to see you shortly. In the Uddhava Gita, there's not this elaborate discussion of universal form, but it comes out in Maitreya speaking to Vidura. Vidura is asking about the activities of the Supreme Lord in relation to this manifested realm. So first part is you have to have the manifested realm. So the process of creation is described. There's a sequence of, I'm just hitting some highlights, but Lord Vishnu is feeling compassion. And specific compassion is, there's living entities that are rebellious towards him, and that's making them unhappy. So he's feeling compassion. He wants to do something about that. Specifically, he wants to relieve them of their unhappiness. But to relieve them of their unhappiness has to involve, of necessity, their rebellious spirit. And he doesn't want to interfere with their rebellious spirit, but he wants to relieve them of their unhappiness. And the second thing is his the reflection of Rama Devi. This is described in great detail in Sri Brahma Samhita, but Chaya Devi is the reflection of his internal potency, Rama Devi. And she has nothing to do. And she wants something to do. So he gives her something to do. That is, to involve the living entities that are rebellious in this make-believe world that we can be independent of Krishna. But also to rectify that errant spirit. The potency is there. The service is given to Chaya Devi, or the external energy. So then the glance is described, and then the separating of the material elements is described one by one. Then suddenly, like a fast forward, skipping a whole lot of things, Maitreya speaks about the demigods. And the demigods are looking at this creation to be thing, and they're feeling inadequate to be able to do their part in regulating, because that's what demigods do. They don't feel qualified. They feel that they need some special mercy from Lord Vishnu to be able to do their service. And so they offer beautiful prayers, the long section of prayers by the demigods. So we're already over now into the Visarga. What Lord Brahma does is the sub-creation. And even the sub-creation part, the demigods are pondering, how is this possible? So the Supreme Lord hears their prayer, and in order to fulfill their desire for strength, intelligence, empowerment, ability, Krishna consciousness, or behind it is the Krishna consciousness, it's the details of their Krishna conscious service, he then expands himself in two ways. He expands himself as Paramatma within every atom and within the heart of all the living entities that he's already sent forth. And he expands himself as the universal form, because the universal form is a necessary part of creation. maybe it's a detail, it's a step that, hey, if you don't understand that step, it's okay, you'll still go back to Godhead. It's like barred from the kingdom of God if you don't understand all this stuff about the universal form. But it's part of the science of not just technology, but the spiritual science of the Lord's compassion. And so he expands as this Virat Rupa, and lots of discussion of what the Virat Rupa is. And then, the section of verses that we're just now reading, the Virat Rupa separates part of his Virat. And by separating this element, that element, his arms, his legs, his heart, his skin, his this thing, his that thing, then the living entities can do, including the demigods can do the demigod thing, and those who the demigods are supplying agents of, they can do their thing too. And the short understanding here is, we can see because the Lord can see. We can feel with our skin sensational touch because the Lord can. And conversely, if that were not to be the case, we couldn't feel, we couldn't see, we couldn't move, we couldn't. We could exist because we're spirit souls. We can't do things of this world unless the Lord is seeing, the Lord is hearing, the Lord is smelling, the Lord is touching. And so that's the function of this Virat Rupa. I'll read some of the verses that don't have purports, so don't ask me to explain them. When the palate of the gigantic form was separately manifested, Varuna, so he's one of the demigods, the director of air, in the planetary systems, although normally we think of Varuna as the lord of the ocean, entered therein, and thus the living entity had the facility to taste everything with his tongue. When the Lord's two nostrils separately manifested themselves. So there's the Virat, and he separates out something. The dual Ashvini Kumaras entered them, and in their positions, entered them in their positions, and because of this, the living entities can smell the aromas of everything. Thereafter, the two eyes of the gigantic form of the Lord were separately manifested. The sun, the director of light, entered them with the partial representation of eyesight, and thus living entities can have vision of forms. And then skin, and then ears, and then so forth. The evacuating channels, the hands of the gigantic form separately became manifested. When that happened, Indra, the ruler of the heavenly planets, entered into them, and thus the living entities are able to transact business for livelihood. Legs, intelligence, heart, to know that's prior to what we're going to read this morning. Text 25. Thereafter, the materialistic ego of the gigantic form, Virat Rup, separately manifested itself. I wonder what that looked like. And into it entered Rudra, the controller of false ego, and with his partial activities, by which the living entity transacts his objective actions. So Prabhupada in the purport explains objective actions as means with the body and with the mind. Because the objective of false ego is the either one of the two. It's a subject-object. So the body or the mind are to do something, and the body and the mind can do something because it's driven by false ego, and the false ego can do the false ego thing because the false ego of, or the materialistic ego of Virat Rup, Matt separated itself. So that the living entities could have actions in relation to their bodies and their minds. Prabhupada writes, purport. The false ego of materialistic identity is controlled by the demigod Rudra, an incarnation of Lord Shiva. Rudra is an incarnation of the Supreme Lord who controls the mode of ignorance within material nature. The activities of false ego are based upon the objective of the body and mind. Most persons conducted by the false ego are controlled by Lord Shiva, or they control through the agency of false ego, which is controlled by Lord Shiva. Controlled means we can't get outside of the confines of our own false ego, which is controlled. Then he described there's a very rarefied or very fine version of this, and that finer version is I am the Supreme. That egoistic conviction of the conditioned soul is the last snare of the illusory energy which controls the entire material world. So the material energy is maya jakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. Under Krishna's superintendence is adyaksha. Material nature is conducting the affairs of all moving and non-moving beings. So even the non-moving beings, the trees and plants and so forth. There used to be some nice ones. He cut them down. But the growth of those trees, you know, whatever the trees do, the producing leaves in the spring and the falling of the leaves in the fall and whatever trees do and whatever moving living entities do, there's this agency of false ego that allows them to do such things. And material nature is driving the whole thing. And false ego is supervised by Lord Shiva, and the whole show is supervised by the personality of Godhead, including Lord Shiva, including the false ego, including the actions in false ego. So it's just like dominoes or cause and effect. So for even material activity, there's behind the material activity is the Virat. Next, no purport for the next few verses. Thereafter, when his, with a capital H, the Virat's consciousness separately manifested itself, the total energy, Mahatattva, entered with his conscious part. What's his conscious part? His living entity. Supreme consciousness and the conscious part. But that's the condition of the living entity entered the Mahatattva. Thus the living entity is able to conceive specific knowledge. So we're dependent, even for our material activity. Thereafter, from the head of the gigantic form, the heavenly planets were manifested. From his legs, the earthly planets, and from his abdomen, the sky, separately manifested themselves. Within them, the demigods and others also were manifested in terms of the modes of material nature. So, like a projection, there's the object and there's the projection of the object. So this realm is the projection of the Virat. It's not exactly the Virat, it's when separately manifest, when separated from the Virat, then these various things became manifested. So those of you that have read or are a little bit familiar with Canto 2, Chapter 1, it's called the first step in God realization. The first step in God realization is to form a conception of God. And persons that don't have a conception of God can think of God in terms of nature, the grandeur of nature, and put the whole thing together and you have God. So the Virat Rupa is that form of the Lord which manifests these things that we see, and these things that, say it the other way, these things that we see are but separated expansions of the Virat Rupa in contact with Prakriti, and then they manifest as such and such. Mountains, sky, trees, rivers, people, animals, stuff, the cosmos. So the picture of Virat is, we've seen pictures of different, besides what the universal form that Krishna showed to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, or in his discussion in the Kurukshetra battlefield. There are other forms of Virat that are just precisely depicting in visual image all of that's being described here. The demigods, qualified by the super excellent quality of the mode of goodness, are situated in the heavenly planet. So think of a visual image of the universal form. The demigods are in the upper portion of the universal form. Whereas the human beings, because of their nature in the mode of passion, live on the earthly realm in company with their subordinates. Living entities that are associates of Rudra develop the third mode of material nature or ignorance. They are situated in the sky between the earthly planets and the heavenly planets. Interesting. In the purport, Prabhupada describes there's the lower regions, but there's also Bhur, Bhuvar, and Svargalokas. So Bhuloka is where we are, Bhumandala, the middle planetary region, and Svargaloka is heavenly region, and then there's this in-between region, Bhuvar Loka. So Bhuvar Loka is, I'll read what it says, the middle portion of the sky is called Bhuvar Loka, as confirmed by Śrīla Viśvanātha Cakravarti Thakura and Jīva Gosvāmī in Bhagavad Gita. So, anyway, Prabhupada is going to say in Bhagavad Gita, Urdvam gacchanti sattvastā, you become situated in the mode of goodness, you go upwards. Madhye tishtanti rajasa, adho gacchanti tamasa. There are these three lower, middle, and upper planetary regions. And then Prabhupada says these two are not contradictory, but although they certainly sound contradictory, because there's seven upper and seven lower planetary systems. Yes? And we're in like position number 8 out of those 14. So Bhu Loka, Bhuvar Loka, Svarga Loka, Mahar Loka, Jana Loka, Tapaloka, Satya Loka. That's the 7. And then below is another 7. So that says that you become situated in the quality of goodness and you go up. You become situated in the mode of passion, you stay in the middle. Situated in the mode of ignorance, you go down. But this verse is, in this Bhuvar Loka, is stating that those in the mode of ignorance go to that region. And the paragraph says it's not contradiction, although it certainly sounds like a contradiction. He says, then, numerous living entities are distributed all over the universe in different planets and are so situated in terms of their own qualities and in their own qualities in the modes of nature. So it's just like we're speaking of those in the mode of passion. There's the human beings and their subordinates. So Prabhupada comments that amongst the animal kingdom, there's some animals that are domestic. Cats, dogs, cows, and so forth. Out of all the animals, there's lots of animals that, you know, you don't bring into your house. But there's some animals that people at least keep as pets or domestic animals. Out of all the different species of animals. So there's the human beings and their associates or their subordinates. And they're in the mode of ignorance, but they're in this middle planetary region. It's only the hellish planets if you're in the mode of ignorance. There's, in this middle planetary region, if you're also in the mode of ignorance, at least they're subordinate to the human beings that are in the mode of passion. And even amongst the animals, there's some more in the mode of passion, some more in the mode of goodness, some more in the mode of ignorance. That's the point. Is that there's a mix. So there's these categories, but it's not so rigid. The living entities spread throughout the creation. According to the modes of nature, they're differently situated. And it's not like really rigid. There's diversity. Okay, the next is Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras, and then a summation. So that's the next five verses. Because when you're looking at depictions of the Virat Rupa, there's, again, a visual image. There's the legs, the thighs, the waist, the arms, the head, the parts of the body. So the Brahmanas are situated here, the Kshatriyas are situated here, the Vaishyas are situated here, Shudras are situated. So on the body of the Virat, because the Virat has these different parts, the features of creation are also manifested. I'll read the verses, starting with text 30. O chief of the Kuru dynasty, the Vedic wisdom became manifested from the mouth of the Virat, the gigantic form. Those who are inclined to this Vedic knowledge are called Brahmanas, and they are the natural teachers and spiritual masters of all the social orders of society. So in the long purport, Prabhupada is describing the duties of a Brahmana, the characteristics of a Brahmana, both. And they're naturally, they're inclined to receive knowledge and they're inclined to give knowledge. That's their propensity. In specific, Vedic knowledge. Not like, you know, car mechanics, but Vedic knowledge. How to understand the divine realm and the divinity behind all things. Those that are so inclined are Brahmanas. They receive and they give and teach and lead spiritually. And so Prabhupada is saying it's not a question of birth, it's a question of inclination. One who is conversant with Vedic knowledge is a Brahmana, and only a Brahmana who is pure Vaishnava but knows all the intricacies of the science of Krishna can become a spiritual master. Text 31. Then the arms. Thereafter, the power of protection was generated from the arms of the gigantic Virat form, and in relation to such power, the Kshatriyas also came into existence by following the Kshatriya principles of protecting society from the disturbance of thieves and miscreants. The Prabhupada discusses the role of protection. He discusses also the position of Purusha, so the living entity, even in Bhagavad Gita in places and elsewhere, is called sometimes Purusha, but actually he's Purusha Shakti, or the energy of the enjoyer. So the energy is to be enjoyed by Purusha. But so this perverted or distorted or incorrect disposition of living entities to be enjoyers it's not possible to do that without the Supreme Lord empowering that living entity to do that. But to have an orderly arrangement under the codes of the Vedas for that to happen, then there has to be protection for those that are abiding by the orders of the Lord and those that are violating the orders of the Lord. And so the power to give protection is the function of Kshatriyas, and those that are so inclined are manifested by the Virat Rupa. The third is the Vaishyas, the means of livelihood of all persons, namely production of grains and their distribution to the Prajas, was generated from the thighs of the Lord's gigantic form. The mercantile community who take charge of such execution are called Vaishyas. And then the duties of the Vaishyas and the relationship of the Vaishyas to the Brahmanas and Kshatriyas. And the rest of society and cow protection and so on, they're described. Thereafter, 33, service was manifested from the legs of the personality God for the sake of perfecting the religious function situated on the legs are the Shudras who satisfy the Lord by their service. Nice long purport about the mood of service. And from a material point of view, it's demeaning to be a servant. You're supposed to be the master, then there's other persons that serve the master. That's good. Be the servant, that's not good. From a spiritual perspective, being a servant is good. Because servant means, who am I the servant of? I'm the servant of Krishna. Because he's the master. He's the master of all people who think that they're the masters. He's the master. And servant of Krishna. As somebody wants to think that they're the master, you know, that's their issue, but Krishna is the master, and I'm the servant of Krishna. He writes, it's actually better to be a Shudra than to be a Brahmana and not develop the service attitude, because that attitude alone satisfies the Lord. Every living being, even if he is a Brahmana by qualification, must take the transcendental service of the Lord. So that's the summary of this principle of service that's built into all of the varnas. Then, in conclusion, all these different social divisions are born with their occupational duties and living conditions from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, for unconditional life and self-realization, one has to worship the Supreme Lord. Very simple. Simple for the simple. Under the direction of the spiritual master. I'll read the purport. Since they are born from different parts of the body of the Supreme Lord in his gigantic form, all living entities are parts and parcels of the entire universe, are supposed to be eternal servitors of the Supreme Body. Every part of our own body, such as mouth, hands, thighs, etc., is meant to render service to the whole. That's their constitutional position. In subhuman life, the living entities are not conscious of this constitutional position, but in the human form of life, they're supposed to know through the system of varnas, the social orders. As above mentioned, the Brahmanas is the spiritual master of all the orders of society, and thus Brahminical culture, containing and culminating in the transcendental service of the Lord, is the basic principle for purifying the soul.
Thank you for the work.
Off to work. See you later. Complex subject, it would seem like it'd just be easier to list, like, delete the universal form and describe all those things without the universal form. But Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita choose not to do that because there is a universal form. It's subtle. Universal form is subtle. The subject matter is subtle. It's like, it's hard to grasp. It's very subtle. The essential idea is, in order for us to do something, the Lord manifests this form so that as he does it, we can do it. He's enabling our rebellious spirit to have an instrument to act through, although it's illusory. I mean, meaning the ability to enjoy independently of the Supreme is illusory. But to give us that opportunity to try to do like that, the universal form is manifest. And then the various grades of activity, the various grades of residential places, the various grades of forms of bodies and life is made possible by this, we say the remote cause or the ultimate cause is the Supreme Lord, making arrangements for all of these things to happen. Without the will of the Supreme Lord, nothing happens. Without the sanction of the Supreme Lord, nothing happens. Hare Krishna. Any discussion on this very fascinating topic? Yes.
Just to clarify my understanding, so in the spiritual world, we have a set of spiritual senses, and so now the Virat Rupa is facilitating the material senses.
Yes.
The set of material senses.
Yes. Yes.
And so the example that Srila Prabhupada gives is that of the hand and the glove. Is that applicable here?
Yes.
Like the spiritual senses are there, but they're covered by the.
Yes. Well, it even more specifically, it's the coat and the shirt and the hand, or you know, the body, the arm, so the gross covering, subtle covering, and then that which is covering. Spiritual senses are there, but dormant, and in their dormant state, these other senses are being provided. Because of the spiritual senses are dormant, because our spirit or disposition towards serving the Supreme Lord is dormant. And as that awakening spirit of serving the Supreme Lord begins or manifests, awakens, spiritual senses also. So that in that case, we can then, by spiritual sense, perceive spiritually. And the material senses can become spiritualized, so they also can assist in the process and become pure, rather than sitting places of lust where we want to enjoy sense objects separately from Krishna. What's the hand that's moving the fingers of the glove, or the torso that's moving the shirt or the coat, spiritually is a spiritual desire to serve Krishna. But if one who doesn't do that, the soul is still there and animating material senses. Without which we can't try to be the purushas, the enjoyers of matter.
From this context, whatever we are reading, I'm thinking of how to practically take any instruction from this. You know, Srimad Bhagavatam, if you read this part, I can understand that, you know, this happened, this manifested, this came. But what is the practical instruction that is told here? Is it the mercy of the Supreme Lord? How he has.
That's one thing. But another thing is remote. The Supreme Lord is there. Behind this is the Supreme Lord. Without the Supreme Lord's enabling this to happen, this wouldn't happen. And then, you know, each of the successive phases of this happening. Behind is the Supreme Lord. That's the practical application. So we're dependent upon the Supreme Lord. And so as devotees, let me then worship the Supreme Lord. Not this deva or this man who is dispensing things that I think I need. Go to the Supreme Lord, become his pure devotee. And then even those, besides those needs being fulfilled, those needs are diminished, because the higher consciousness, the higher satisfaction, the higher purpose of life, restoring that consciousness is the purpose.
So it is more of building a faith.
Well, it's building a faith, yes. It's the science of what is. Sariputta used to describe the harm that Bible creationists created for the cause of God consciousness. Because they would take things, Old Testament things, in a literal way, and scientists would just like shoot holes through it. But you know, their wish was to have people, you know, this is the truth, and here's the truth. And then there's this science and that science and that science that doesn't hold up to what you call truth. So the ship sinks. It just gives strength to, you know, there's no God. So here's another picture that says God is the source of everything. And there's no torpedoes or bullets or, you know, it's impenetrable. The ship doesn't sink. It's non-falsifiable by science. It doesn't prove any more than science proves anything. But those persons over there that have those bullets and, you know, artillery and airplanes and all those things, bombs, it's impenetrable. It's scientific. Yes, it increases faith. But there's an explanation, not just, okay, I believe God created heaven and earth in 7 days and it was good. And he rested. He did it 6 days. He rested on number 7. Got tired. Yes?
In the second canto, the description of the universal form of the Lord, my understanding was when Lord Brahma was created, he did not have the ingredients to create, though he had the propensity to create. So the Lord manifested the universal form, and he used the different parts of the body to create the material world.
Yeah. Not exactly. He didn't use the... He took... It's like a blueprint from which a contractor build something. I don't know exactly how it works, but an architect makes a design and the design is approved and somebody makes a blueprint that then the contractor comes and looks at the blueprint. He follows the blueprint, takes the impression of the blueprint and he replicates it in 3 dimensions. So Lord Brahma had this impetus to create a universe. So the universal form creates the blueprint. And following the blueprint, the ingredients are supplied by Lord Vishnu, not precisely by the Virat Rupa, but Lord Vishnu. There's this big warehouse, and he's got this blueprint, and he creates accordingly.
In this section, we read that the Virat Rupa was manifested when the demigods were...
Yes, it does.
So, and Brahma creates the demigods.
That's right.
So, yeah, I'm not able to understand
this. I'm not either.
Okay.
it doesn't explain it. Because in the explanation, the demigods are created. But wait a minute. The demigods already offered prayers. And then the Lord manifested the universal form, and then the demigods were created. There's something in the sequence that doesn't connect. Someone else?
Yeah. So as I was hearing the lecture, it was hard to grab hold of it. But I could tangibly feel a sense of relief towards the end when Prabhupada started talking about the spiritual master And so my realization is, without the mercy of the spiritual master, I mean, these intricate subject matters is impossible to understand. Yeah. And
okay.
That's just a comment, so okay. I'm very grateful. And while we're on the topic of Prabhupada described the varnashram system a little bit. as devotees, is it better for us to focus on on knowing our spiritual nature and acting in that relationship more than whether I'm a brahmana, a vaishya, or shudra, or like the Hope Prabhupada says, material well-being follows spiritual well-being. So just focus on accepting the Vaishnava practices, and by that, everything will also become clear.
Put it the other way around, and everything's blurry. Let me just figure out what my varna is and what my ashram is, and everything's blurry. But if one focuses on the Vaishnava principles, then things become more focused and more clear. And the knowledge then becomes a decoration or a detail rather than like the essence.
And like as you were sharing, then it doesn't even become this demeaning thing. Like I was very inspired when Prabhupada said, the Shudra, his quality is a service mode. In a way, as Vaishnavas, that's what we want actually.
So yeah, this is not speaking about devotees or Vaishnavas. It's speaking about those who are not Vaishnavas and their position within the social structure. Not in service to Krishna, but they're just their position in the social structure is they serve the other divisions. So that service spirit surpasses the one who has, I have an intellectual propensity and I like to learn things, but I don't have a service spirit. That's better to be the other, having the service spirit. Superior. Yes.
Maharaj, whenever service is given, the first tendency is to segregate into four sections and see where it falls. And I feel that sometimes when it is more visible or something, the tendency is to get more motivated. So I want to know how to...
Can you do the premise of your question first again? When you resign some service, what happens automatically? Four things start to happen? What are the four things that start to happen?
Not the four things. I just think in which section it falls. If it is very visible, or the service, it's more humble, or that way. So I want to know how to come out of this block of saying when that service is given, it's a block that I feel more motivated or something when I feel that this is a nice service. And,
oh.
Yeah.
I like, I don't like.
Yes.
What's the basis of I like, I don't like? At least philosophically, you know the answer. Modes of nature, false ego, things that are sources of misery. I like this misery, I don't like that misery. But it's misery. The platform of attending to the dictates of the senses, driven by false ego, that's misery. Fundamentally, it's misery. Whether I like it or I don't like it, you know. Yehi sam sparsha ja bhoga dukha yonaya evate. Those things that start off looking like, wow, I'm going to like this. That very spirit is the source of dukkha. So the problem lies right there. being the enjoyer, or thinking of oneself of, I enjoy this. So just the enjoying spirit is implicating. It buys you misery. So, you know, nip it in the bud. Just don't go there. Okay, how do where do I go? I'm a servant. What do servants do? Servants serve. Supposing it's raining. Oh, I don't want to serve today. Come on. It's cold. I don't want to serve today. It's too hot. I don't want to serve today. Not the basis of service. Service is something is to be done. So we serve. We may take an umbrella, or we may take a coat, or we may have a fan, or, you know, but we serve. Because we're servants. And that's the place of happiness. It's who we are. The other is who we aren't. And it's miserable being who we aren't. Trying to be happy in a world of make-believe. It's misery.
Just to see if I'm understanding it right, whatever service is given, whether I like it or not.
It has nothing to do with whether you like it. Yes, whether you like it or not, but that's still kind of like stuck in the space of, you know, oh, I like it. The mind is involved in contemplating whether I like it or not. And withdraw the mind from whether I like it or not. And where do you place the mind in that case? I'm Krishna's servant. Okay. Now, is this going to be pleasing to Krishna? It's hot, and somebody has to cook, but I don't like being in the kitchen when it's hot. It makes more hot. So I won't cook. Or I'll do it, but I don't want to do it, but I'll do it. Because I'm supposed to do what I'm supposed to do. Or it's cold. I don't take a bath. It's cold. Okay. Take a bath because you have to take a bath to become clean. Take a bath. You just like don't consider. It's not like not a factor. And even more specifically, that very mentality brings me misery. And even if you haven't like deeply understood it, contemplate it and don't go there. And in course of time, by Krishna, awakening of Krishna consciousness, you'll understand that mentality is the birthplace of misery. Whether I like it or not. Even if I like it, it's the birthplace of misery. And if I don't like it, it's the birthplace of misery, because the very consideration of my happiness is really what's going on here. My senses is really what's going on. That's misery. By design, it's misery. You know, it's got a big label. Misery! So don't buy it. Now what do I do? I have to do something. So take up service in a service mood. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Yeah.